artist behind the epic melodies, songs, and beats. Celebrating the best new music from around the world. This is the A State of Trance Podcast.
Hey, what's up? My name is Ruben Ronde, and this is a brand new Estate of Trance podcast with a very special in the studio today. Originally from Utrecht, but I think he lives in Amsterdam right now. Dominik Vijverberg, yes. A.k.a. Departure.
Thank you for having me.
How are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
It's good to have you here in the hot seat. Whenever you have a guest in the studio for the first time, we're really looking to the story of the history of the artist and also go a little bit into the questions that were submitted by our social media followers. But first of all, every story has a start. So let's start with the story of Departure. Tell us, how did you fall in love with dance music? Do you still remember the moment you were like, okay, this is it?
Yes, I can even remember the track that first got me into electronic music.
Yeah, which was it?
Yeah, I was like probably 10, 11 years old. It was a track by G-Spot called No Comment.
Really?
Yes, and I saw the video clip. And I was like, wow, this is amazing.
G-Spot, that's a project by Richard Durant. He's still often being playing on the radio show. I think it was a massive commercial project in the, let's say, early zeros, maybe late 90s also.
Yeah, exactly.
So you saw the video clip and you were like, okay, this is it.
Yeah, it was
I love this.
Yeah, it was. I was really into like the heavy metal of the time, like Limp Bizkit and Korn and stuff. Mm-hmm. And not really into electronic music. But it was the time of TMF and The Box in the Netherlands, where everybody watched video clips from the sofa.
Yeah.
And I saw this, and yeah, it was kind of a turning point where I thought, hey, this is very cool, actually.
That's a massive contrast going from Korn to G-Spot.
Yeah, I still like both, actually.
Yeah? You still listen to both of them?
Yeah. So from there, I started, I got really into trance music, and that always stuck with me. Like, even then, at the time, was Trance Around the World with Above and Beyond, and of course, A State of Trance. Exactly.
With Above and Beyond.
And like in contrast, of course, I'm Dutch. We have another scene that's very big here and almost only here, which is the hard dance scene.
Yeah.
And really got into that as well. Still occasionally like to go as a visitor. But yeah, that's basically where the love for the music started.
So it started with G-Spot, and then you started to going into to research a little bit. You started listening to radio shows like A Trance Around the World.
Exactly.
With Above Beyond.
Yeah.
And State of Trance as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yes.
And then the moment came, okay, you start listening to this stuff. I would say you research it more and more into the music. When did the moment come to you that you were like, okay, I want to start DJing or start making music as well? Because there's probably two sides to this.
Definitely. So the DJing started when I was, I think, around 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And I got to borrow the turntables of the brother of my former girlfriend.
Yeah.
And yeah, that got the DJ thing really going, really got addicted to it. But it was usually just, I don't know, weddings and like small-time pubs and stuff where I played a lot. And then when I was a student, I, of course, had too much time on my hands. And,
of course.
And then basically, yeah, it started just with filling around for fun with Fruity Loops. And that came when I was about 20. I'm 33 now. So I've been producing for around 13 years, I think.
Yeah.
And I just, then I knew it clicked. Like, this is so damn addictive. All I want to do is this. Like all day long.
So whenever you woke up in the morning, Fruit Loops was the first thing that you would open.
Yeah, exactly.
And start playing around with it.
Yeah, yeah. At some point I switched to Ableton, like after a few years. But like the producing virus, it always stuck and still does. Like,
How long did it take you before you made that switch? Or did you make something releasable already in Fruity Loops? Or was it something that started when you switched to Ableton?
I think my first releases were in Ableton already. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I switched after like, I think probably 3 or 4 years or something.
Okay.
I didn't release for quite a while when I started. Sometimes you hear stories about other artists, you know, start making music, do it for like half a year and then bam.
Yeah.
They're there. It wasn't for me like that. I've been experimenting with what I want for quite a long time. And I still do, actually. Like,
yeah.
It's like a constant, steady, slow but steady evolution.
Was it something that you weren't happy with the things that you produced? Or did you didn't just finish anything? You just were just playing around and that's it?
No, I actually did finish a lot. But I think as I enjoy so much, I was always fiddling around, okay, what should it be? Should it be housey? Should it be full-on trance? Even at the beginning, I was like, okay, should it be hard dance? Mm-hmm. But hard dance is very fun to attend at a party or to listen to sometimes in the car after a tough day. But to make it in the studio is something else. Like all the ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. And also, I think people underestimate how much time it takes for hard dance producers to get the kick right, for example.
If anybody who's in doubt or saying that that's simple, easy music,
I think it's one of the hardest ones because they distort everything and still it's still enjoyable to listen to.
Exactly. So it's like a controlled type of distortion and the kick is everything.
Okay.
Like the kick
so it wasn't hard dance for you?
No.
You were just experimenting a lot before the first release. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I wrote down a couple of dates where we're going to walk through. 2014, I Know and Give Me This One on Hot Senses.
Yes.
Those were the first releases?
Those were the first releases. Indeed, I was very proud of that. It was quite a milestone at the time. Very different sound-wise from what I do now. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the first releases that actually got things going for me was a release on Oliver Weiter's label, Weiter.
Yeah.
The track was called Purser.
Purser and Pilot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the gimmick with the aviation themed names started there.
Yeah.
And that track got picked up by, especially Purser, got picked up by Ilke Klein and a few others in the progressive scene. And that kind of got things going.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we'll get to that in just a little bit. I'm going to jump back in time a little bit because I'm very curious to, because a lot of like aspiring DJs and producers are probably listening to this and wondering how did you get to that point that you were confident enough to send I Know and Give Me This One to a label that you get your release done. Because I think the first release that you ever do is such a pinnacle moment in your career.
True.
Do you still remember sending that demo and that you were like, okay, this is it, I'm going to send it? Because you were playing around for years already.
So I remember sending it to someone I know really well. And he sent it to a friend who ran the label.
Okay.
And for the first time I got feedback, hey, this is really cool. I would love to release this. And definitely a pinnacle moment. I mean, I think when you're a producer or DJ, throughout time, you get kind of a thick skin because it's very personal what you're doing.
Yeah.
You spend hours alone in the studio thinking something, especially at the starting point, hey, I made something great. Maybe in hindsight for other people, it's not that great yet. So you learn, you get kind of a thick skin and you get used to some rejections. So at the moment when for the first time someone says, hey, this is really awesome, we
like,
want to
really?
Release this.
Really?
Yeah, like it gets you going again for the next few years, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I know I got this, I can do this.
Yeah, I think you're right because the personal thing, it's like you can compare it to a painter, for example. You paint something, you're all by yourself, you paint something and at a certain moment you're like, hey, I'm going to hang this on the wall. And this means that everybody can criticize it or can think something about it.
Definitely.
It's a bit scary.
Yeah. No, it still is, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still in the studio often after 13 years of producing and in doubt after, you know, listening back after a day. Okay, I thought it was cool, but is it cool? And
yeah.
It's really nice that a lot of people listen to my music nowadays, but it also means that you get sometimes a little bit more criticism.
Yeah.
And that's all part of the deal.
That's a thick skin.
Exactly. Yeah. You get a really thick skin from it.
How did you deal with the rejection? Because I remember I had the same thing growing up in making music and sending demos to labels. And sometimes you would not get a reply and sometimes you would get something like, no, this is not it. This is not for us. How did you deal with the rejections?
The way for me over the course of the years, like looking at like kind of a timeline, you need something, you know, like the first release, you need sometimes small milestones that keep you going. And you learn to deal with the rejections in that way because you start to view it like as a journey. And okay, this rejection is part of the journey, this rejection is part of the journey, but I know something good is like coming up in the future.
Yeah.
And having these milestones, and I can in honesty say in the past there's also been times that I thought, shit, you know, you got into a bad vibe, like into a negative spiral, and then just as you thought, okay, is this something for me, and then something positive happened again that got you going again, or someone who believed in you, or a good label that wanted to release your music So over time, I learned to be a little bit more patient and focus on the long run, you know, and not these, I mean, milestones and rejections are always hard. But in the long run, I mean, it's not worth your inner peace. And I get to do what I love.
Yeah. A lot of people give up after the first time, but I saw a nice quote actually on Instagram the other day. A winner is a loser that didn't give up. Yeah. So maybe that's something that you should keep in mind as soon as you get rejections in, that every winner has had rejections and was a loser at the time.
Definitely.
Maybe not that black and white, but you know what I mean.
No, but yeah, definitely. Like being in music is a game of a lot of rejection and keep going, you know, and trusting in what you do. And there's a lot of life lessons in that journey, actually.
Have you seen a lot of artists that you grew up with, maybe from Utrecht, or that gave up at a certain point and you were the only one that just kept on going?
Yes, I think so. Quite a lot. And always the people who stopped were often as super talented, but you know, life got in the way. They were tired of the rejections. You know, it wasn't as glamorous as they thought it would be. You know, looking at the DJs of other lives, because you don't really see like the backside of it and what they had to do to get there and how hard the work was.
Yeah,
and I see now as well I think my DJ peers who are in the same game as me, they're super hard workers, and you have to. And as long as you keep going, like I trust. If you really want it and you work hard for it, like the whole universe conspires to get it for you. Like,
yeah. That's the manifesting part of things.
Exactly. Yeah. Manifest is a bit of a, we overuse that word, but I mean, there's truth in that.
Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah. I believe in it 100% as well, because if you set your mind into achieving certain goals, I think you can achieve it.
Exactly.
You just have to work really hard for it. And sometimes it's like what you say, you have to face rejections, but if you get over the rejections, then the win is even more sweet, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah. The win is sweeter. And I mean, you get to do what you love day in, day out.
Yeah. So, you already mentioned it, 2017. That was actually the first steps that you took into the sound that we maybe know you a little bit more for nowadays, the deep progressive sounds with Purser and Pilot on White Recordings. Also, Dreamliner followed up in the same year on Proton. And those were the first releases that I listened to you from in the last couple of days preparing for this, that you hear departure already. Like the first release were a little bit all over the place, a bit more trancy, I would say. What was it in the studio that clicked in 2017 that you were like, hey, this is my sound?
It was actually a very clear epiphany.
Yeah.
Before that, I produced what I thought label A&Rs wanted to hear.
Ah.
And there was a breaking point where I said, you know, screw it, I'm really gonna be in the studio and make music that I would like to listen to myself.
Okay.
And then the first track was Purser.
Yeah.
And that got immediate positive feedback from Oliver Weiter and Ilke Klein. And then I thought, okay, I'm onto something here. I just need to do what I enjoy, because then the most honest music comes out of that.
Yeah. So that's actually a big moment that you started making music for yourself rather than for other people.
Yeah, definitely.
And yourself was a better audience than other people, I guess.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think, there's, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but like staying true to yourself in that sense just creates the most.
How did you approach music from that moment on? Did you just sit down and just make whatever you thought was cool at the moment for yourself and then see whatever happens?
Yeah, I actually tried to stick that until today. Like even I tried to make what I would enjoy on the dance floor and what I would like to listen to. And I never let go of that learning at that moment. And of course, that may still change my music from time to time, because my taste changes and my mood changes. But I think underlying, and hopefully that's what people recognize, you can still always hear those departure elements, or the departure type of build-up, or the departure type of emotion below. That's always there.
You already mentioned it already in the regular episode of State of Trance, that you always try to find like certain chords that fit your sound and create tears on the dance floor, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Stir up emotions, that's what it is.
I mean, it's a bit, I mean, it would be arrogant to say that always happens, of course, but it's always like the goal to create something that touches.
Smiles or tears.
Exactly.
Some of those.
Yeah.
Let's continue the timeline a little bit, because a name popped up that we had recently in the studio as well in 2018 also in the start of his career back then, Cabin Pressure, your tune got remixed by Niels Hofman.
Yeah.
And after that, you did a swap. I think you did a remix yourself of Heading Home.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Because Niels Hofman right now is also exploding. He's playing everywhere. We had him in the studio with fantastic sound as well. Super nice guy.
Really nice guy. Yeah, actually, couple of years ago, he was a resident on a label. Mm-hmm. It's called Pussy Music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not yeah.
Yeah.
P-O-E-S-E.
Yeah, exactly. Poesy.
Exactly. And he was like the label resident there. And he got me, which is like a sub-label of Get Physical.
Yeah.
And he got me in touch with their A&R and he said, okay, yeah, you should release some music with me. We like your sound. And yeah, that's how we got to know each other.
So Niels reached out to you like, hey, I want to hear some more music from you.
I think so. Yes. Yeah. It's been quite a few years,
yeah.
But I think that's how it happened. But super nice guy. We were in touch for a long time after that. And indeed, he did a few albums at Njuna afterwards and he really exploded. So, I mean, also a super hard worker, I know. And,
Insane sound design. And of course, his tracks with Ben Boehmer are the ones that are really, really, really massive as well.
Exactly.
So that's interesting. Are you still in touch with him sometimes? Or is it something that...
Not often at the moment, but when we speak, it's always nice. Yeah.
Okay. And then 2018, at the end of 2018, another big step in your career because you started releasing music with... This Never Happened.
Yeah.
Grand Lady and Hurricane.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us about that. How did those tracks end up with This Never Happened?
So I think, especially in the start of your career, it's nice to have a few popular DJs who really support you. You need that at the beginning.
Yeah.
You need that to get your name out. And I luckily had a few. I already mentioned Oliver Weiter and Ilke Klein. But one of the others was also Lane 8.
Yeah.
Was one of the first people who really started to support my music.
Mm-hmm.
And he started his label, This Never Happened. And I was lucky to be, I think, among the first to start releasing there. And right now the label is huge.
It's
released so much music and still lucky to work with him. And but that was a starting point. And I mean, his fan base was so huge in the US. So getting my tracks out there on his platform was like, a big step forward to get my name known among the audience that listens to that type of music.
And then you released those tracks end of 2020.
Yeah.
And then of course, Corona hits.
Yeah.
So. Oh no, that's actually later. I want to also bring out one of the tracks that's streamed most on Spotify is a release with Electronic Elements. That was in 2020. Parachute.
Yes.
Tell us about that one.
Okay, so there's actually... a nice story about the vote. So first of all, I released this track with Oak and and with vocals from Rubinson. And Oak is a good friend of mine who I actually met during a dance fair years ago.
Dance fair, okay, yes. That's like a convention in Utrecht. I'm not sure if that's still there.
I don't think it's still there.
It was like a convention for talented artists that could link with labels. There was a lot of demo.
Yeah,
Demo drops were revealed. I also did a demo drop for Amara there once.
Ah, nice.
So it's sad it's not there anymore. It was even the same weekend as a State of Trance because it was one part of Yarburst where you had Dance Fair and then on the other side you had a State of Trance. It was
true.
Coincidence.
Yeah. No, yeah, it was a lot of fun, those fairs actually. Shame that they're not there anymore, but yeah, probably valid reasons for that. But I met Oak, or aka Wesley there. We became good friends. He worked actually for the fair. And he was about to decline me entrance to Ilke Klein's production talk.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Because I was late. And then I was like, please let me in. You know, he's been playing my track, Purser.
He's like, whatever. Meet him. Everybody says that.
And he looked me in the eye. I said, okay, you look genuine. Okay, get in. And then we actually became good friends afterwards. So... Yeah. This is a co-production and we needed vocals. Mm-hmm. And Rubinson is a vocalist who I actually met. He was playing at like a food truck festival in Utrecht.
Okay.
And I heard him singing and he had like this rawness in his voice. And I came up to him and I said, hey, do you ever do house music? Like top lines? He said, no idea. So that's how he got into touch.
What?
And I just had signed a publishing deal with Cloud9. And I introduced him to Cloud9 as well. And he did a lot of top lines afterwards also.
No way.
This wasn't the first one. It was the second one we did.
Yeah.
I also did a track called Rewrite with him. And this was the second one, and yeah, released it on Electronic Elements, on Armada, of course, also another very, very nice milestone. And I don't know what happened.
So you just walked around in Utrecht on the street, you hear a voice like, wait a minute, this sounds really nice.
Yeah. And I think for the first track, like the same evening, I sent him like an instrumental music. And I, like, on his phone, he recorded like a top line. It's like, is this something?
Am I doing this right?
Am I doing this right? And it was like literally immediately right. And we spent the whole day recording it together, actually, in the studio, which is always a little bit more personal, right? Than receiving your vocals. Yeah. Like, it's easier, but it's also nice to do it together.
Yeah.
So we recorded it together. And in this case, the three of us here in the Cloud9/Armada Studios at the time. And
this, I love that story. That's amazing. You just sit there with a guitar on the street and suddenly someone approaches you like, hey, do you want to do this?
Yeah. Yeah. He was with the band, but there was something about his voice. So
amazing.
Thanks.
So instead of going for the regular names, you could find artists like that as well, I guess.
Definitely. Like,
it doesn't hurt to ask someone because, you know, you could also just choose not approaching someone and then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, it never hurts to ask. So yeah, there. It was super nice how it worked out. Like stars were aligned.
Yeah, exactly. Also, another relationship that started for you was in 2022 when you started releasing music with 03, which is a sub label for Tool Room Recordings.
Yes.
How did that come about, and why did you choose to go with 03 at a certain point?
Well, I think first of all, in my sound, basically, slightly more progressive and sometimes dabbing into melodic techno, but often a little bit more progressive. There aren't that many labels that release this kind of music. It's a small pool.
Yeah.
And 03 is known to be one of the good ones and who do really well on promo, have a good reputation. Good A&R, you know, Jamie does a very good job.
Jamie Kemp.
Yeah, exactly. Does a very good job in what he does, and also really helps with feedback to get the music to an even better level after you send it without harming the creative part that much, you know, that it still feels your own. So it's a logical choice for me to release some music there as well. And all the tracks that I did there often did relatively well, got picked up nicely. They stream quite well. Just a combination of a nice label to work with on the communication side. You know, I think other producers who might be listening to this know that not every label is as communicative as the other.
Yeah.
And just the way of cooperation is really nice for 03. I can, by the way, say the same for most of the other labels I work with. Like This Never Happened as well. Colorize also. And Juna, Armada. All around, there's something friendly about this scene, which I don't think all genres have.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
I agree with that. You already mentioned it, because going through this story, one thing that's really standing out for me is that you release on a lot of different labels all the time. Why do you decide to pick not one home for your music, but rather have several of them?
I think it has multiple reasons. First of all, I'm as I explained earlier, I love being in the studio, so I make a lot of music.
Yeah.
So I don't think most of the labels I release on have the schedule to get me on there every month.
Yeah.
And I also think it fits my personality. I make music that fits my mood, and sometimes it's a bit different. Sometimes it fits a little bit more there. So sometimes it fits a little bit more there. Mm-hmm. I also try to take that into account when I send out demos. Okay, what platform would be the best home for this particular track?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the biggest reason. And of course, more labels also mean there's upsides and downsides. I mean, on the one hand, you had to get a wider audience. On the other hand,
less priority.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. On the other hand, less priority. But historically, it always felt better to keep all doors open, let's say, and not commit myself too much.
Yeah.
So it just happened that way. And probably it's like a reflection of who I am.
Yeah. What would you advise up-and-coming artists to in label wise, what would you advise to them? And would you say like pick one label and stick to it, or would you say the same, like, okay, just see whatever, finish something and send it out to whatever you want to, you feel like, or what fits the tune?
I think everybody's journey is different,
yeah,
getting into this. So what worked for me might not work for someone else. Maybe if I would have made different decisions, other things would have happened. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not really advice for me to give there, other than focus on creating your best music and music that you enjoy. I already think I gave one important tip, and that is stick true to what you like, because no doubt the best results will come of that.
Mm-hmm.
And send out your music, maybe also to some famous DJs directly, if you can somehow find a way to reach them. Because if they play your music and their support, that's always, that helps also in the label game, you know, mm-hmm. that your track gets supported by a few sponsors that already are known names in the industry. And from there, I mean, at the beginning there, you don't have that much, you don't know that many people yet. So I would say try a little bit more, try a couple of labels, and then see from where it goes from there.
Yeah.
But you need also, as an aspiring DJ, you need some type of milestones at some point. So try out.
Yeah.
I would say try out what works for you, and see who appreciates you, who believes in you, and go from there.
And talking about the milestones, because that's a nice one as well. Is that something that you have, like certain goals in your life that you wrote down and that you're ticking off boxes, like a bucket list? Are you working with that as well?
A bit. So there's two things. Being in the music game, we already talked about it for a bit. I mean, it's amazing to be working on your passion from a day-to-day basis, mm-hmm. and playing your music and seeing people happy and dancing. But because it's so personal, as we already discussed, the same thing that you love so much can also become like a source of insecurity, of unhappiness, anxiety, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So my main goal is to enjoy the ride and let go of that, stay present in the moment as I do it.
And
enjoy the milestones, but never focus on them too much, because then they can become a source of unhappiness as well, which I don't want. I just want to really enjoy the journey. And of course, from a secondary perspective, I mean, I want to tour the world, which I'm about to do for the first time in the US. I want to play my music all over the world. I want to create my own best music. I want to have, of course, a listener base that is as wide as possible. All the things that every producer wants.
What was the last milestone that you achieved that you were like, okay, I'm really proud of myself right now, and up to the next one?
A couple of them, like on the music release spectrum, it was, you know, releasing music on labels like Armada and Anjuna, you know, that I grew up with, as mm-hmm. as I explained earlier, huge milestones for me.
Well, what's the last one? Let's say in the last few months, what was the last thing that you were like, okay?
My first, it hasn't happened yet, but my first confirmed tour in the US.
Yeah.
That's like a really big one for me.
That's massive.
Yeah. So being able to play there now and seeing those bookings roll in being able to play my music on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
That's
because
huge.
I think a lot of people don't understand that jumping into that deep dive into the US market, first of all, is a commitment. It takes a long time to get your visa.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of money. So it's quite an investment, especially if you're an up and coming artist. And then you just have to hope that those shows will come in as well. And as soon as they come in, I can understand that. It's a milestone.
It happened. Indeed, the visa was quite a process.
Yeah.
And luckily I had really the right people to help me with that.
Yeah.
And I mean, afterwards, way sooner than I would have hoped, like the gig started coming in.
Yeah.
So, and the US is huge, of course. And my type of music is big there.
Yeah.
So going there is definitely my recent biggest milestone.
Awesome. And what is the next milestone that you're going to achieve music-wise? Because you already mentioned you releasing on these labels now. Okay, that's done. I've done that. So what is the next one that is on the horizon? You don't have to share it, but maybe there's something that's going to happen.
There, as I I think I explained during the podcast or during the regular radio show that I had a little release pause for the last 4 months. Like my first release is again...
It was last week.
Exactly.
And the one before was on Sequoia in December.
Exactly.
So 4 months no music.
4 months no music, like figuring out where I want to go in the new year musically, spending a lot of time in the studio doing what I love most basically, being in the studio and working on my music. As of now, as of April, I think the hiatus between releasing music has stopped. Like my release schedule is almost full every month for the rest of the year. Can't really share the next milestone, but it will be on the labels that we already mentioned, the good ones. And I think those labels are already the highest thing to reach. And of course, if they become a hit as well, that will be a good bonus.
Well, you played a couple of IDs already in your guest mix. So if you want to hear the new music that is coming out this year by Departure, make sure to check the guest mix on A State of Trance. I have a question that came in from Ninsa Music, which I'm also very curious about because you don't produce music at home. You have a separate studio, which you share in a building here in Amsterdam with other artists like Rose Ring. We just talked about that as well. What do you do to get into a creative headspace?
Hi Ninza, by the way. To get into the creative headspace, I need to be in a place of rest and not stress. So creativity doesn't come after a long day of being busy with all sorts of stuff. And two things can happen. Either I go into the studio completely like a blank page and I just start fiddling around with some of my synths.
Or the Prophet, I saw.
The Prophet, exactly, or my MOOC. And stuff comes out of that. Or in terms of music production, there's so much cool stuff available that can give you inspiration. All these weird sampling type of machines. And so sometimes it comes from there. But to be honest, the times that new music comes to me fast is when there's some kind of idea already in my head. Mm-hmm. And often it's from other genres, like one simple hook or like a chord structure or something like that. I use it as a starting point. And in a weird way, if you already have that starting point, it feels like remixing your own track, you know? Like you already have something to work with and all you need to do is give it your own, give it your own little, you say in Dutch, we say your own sauce. So I think that's it. And I'm always alert when listening to music on the radio or when watching TV or movie or a series. Like there's always something in you that's alert. And when something pops up, I often write it down. So if I hear like the ending credits of a show and I hear really nice music I pause it and then I write down on what second the music came up. And then in the studio, I re-listen to it. Oh, yeah. And
you write it down on a notepad or on your phone?
Yeah, not on my phone. Just really simple on a note, in my notepads in my phone. And I do that really often. So I write down ideas. And that usually gives me a starting point. But again, sometimes, just starting with nothing, if I have the right headspace, really creative things come out of that as well.
So you don't work on music at home at all? Or do you some ideas at home and then work out in the studio?
Actually, the other way around often. Okay. So I do a lot at home. Like I do most of my production probably from the sofa with headphones. But to be in the creative space, it's very nice to be in the studio. For the first phase, the creative phase, and like the final mixdown, both I do in the studio. And everything in between, like filling the gaps and making something after my creative session, I can do fine from the sofa.
So you really split up your musical process of making a track. You have like different sessions for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And
what are those? Like how would you split those up? So, let's say, okay, so it starts with you hear a certain, I would say a chord in Top Gear, for example.
Exactly, Well, let's say I hear a chord that I see on TV or Top Gear or the Grand Tour nowadays. So I go to the studio with that idea. And I try to recreate those chords or give it the twist that I already had in my mind that I will give it. And then I have my full creative session. So in, usually I have like 4 or 5 productive hours in the studio.
Yeah.
And I try to get as much stems or instruments down, like to make like a concept of a track. And after that, when the concept is there, then I know each time I listen to it, okay, the creativity starts flowing again. And then it makes it really easy for me to, at home from the sofa, at ease, like in the evenings, create like an arrangement around it, build ups, the transitions. Also a big part of the mix already.
Yeah.
I think I have good headphones now.
Which one do you use?
They're called Hifiman HE1000 Stealth.
Okay.
Like some hi-fi stuff. Yeah. Really nice ones indeed. Okay. Anyway.
Taking notes.
Yeah. So after that, I try to finish the arrangement, and then comes a period of a couple of days where I listen to earphones in the car, in the studio, like everywhere. And then I tweak the mix, and that part can often take actually really long. Like it takes several weeks to get it right everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a final mix down session in the studio where I basically finish it. And then, I'm very enthusiastic then. So I try to send it out to, I try to play it out, of course, and tweak the music based on that.
Mm-hmm.
But also send it out as soon as possible to like A&Rs after that to try to get some momentum going when the magic of the production is still there.
When you're still excited about everything.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So that's interesting. So you make music in the studio, but also at home. Do you still have free time in between things, or are you just making music nonstop?
No, I actually have a day job at the moment as well.
Uh-huh.
The downside is that during the day I have less time to make music.
Yeah.
But I do have some free days during the week to be in the studio. The upside is that at this point of my career, I don't have to burden the creativity with financial distress and worrying from paycheck to paycheck if I can get through the month.
Yeah.
So there's
which is a massive pressure, of course.
Yeah. Massive, yeah. So, and I think that would really hurt me creatively because then I would not be able to make music anymore that I enjoy, but then there would be different incentive.
Yeah.
So it keeps my music more honest. Not a lot of free time.
Yeah.
But a lifestyle I do really
but
enjoy.
But it also gives you a certain, I wouldn't say pressure, but it also gives you certain times that you were like, okay, now I really want to make music because you've been doing other stuff. So there's like a healthy balance in between doing non-music stuff and doing music stuff.
So I actually once, for any musicians, producers who are listening, I read a nice book which is called Big Magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's real hard.
Oh.
I read a book called Big Magic. It's worth a read, but it actually says indeed that it's nice to have a healthy balance and actually do work next to your creative life.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to burden your creativity, as already said, but also it gives you structure from day to day. Waking up at a certain time, do your thing, like have structure in the way that you would have in a regular.
Yeah, I think structure is one of the most important things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You can adjust the volume by following the wire. There's a little button there. He's been listening to his voice in like proper volume for over half an hour already.
No, I think I turned it on. I turned it up with my knee like just now. So sorry.
All right. Well, thank you for giving so much nice insights in how you do things. And I think something that you really can take out of it if you're an aspiring producer right now is... first of all, to take losses and turn them into wins and be patient enough. And also what you said in the end, it really resonates as well, that you somehow have to create balance in everything, because I think working on music 24/7 isn't healthy either, because I think at a certain point there it's impossible to keep on creating while you don't have any input on the other side, right? So
completely agree. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So make sure that whatever you're doing, do it in balance and don't burn yourself out, because at a certain point, if you lose the love of making music, it's hard to get it back again.
Definitely. Anyway. Yes.
So those are the wise lessons that you can learn today in the podcast of Departure. Thank you so much for answering all these questions. Have fun in America touring. I know that it's a lot of fun over there. Whole new world to discover. And we keep following you. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Next time, we're going to be back with Steve DK from Colombia. He's going to fly into to be here in the studio to play a guest mix and also to do a podcast. If you have any questions for him, make sure to write them in the comments section here. And we'll see you next time for a new podcast. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in. Check all previous episodes on YouTube or your favorite podcast portal.